If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
The kids on Elm Street don't know it yet, but something is coming to get them.
There's something out there, isn't there?
Halloweenies, a Freddy Krueger podcast.
Was locked in a room with a girl who went in alive and came out in a rubber bag.
From the Consequence Podcast Network, the minds behind The Losers Club, comes a new podcast in fantasy terror.
Nancy? Something wrong with you. You're imagining things.
Halloweenies, a Freddy Krueger podcast.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with... It's me. And this is an audio interview series presented by WFPK, Independent Louisville, at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. If you're already a subscriber, thank you so much for checking out the series that we release interviews Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Please do take the opportunity to leave a review, give the series a rating, all of the normal jargon that comes along with podcasting. Of course, if you're not, this is your moment to hit the subscribe button wherever you get your favorite podcast from, wherever you're hearing this from right now. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest is Bill Payne of the legendary Little Feat. Little Feat are on their 50th anniversary tour this year, and Bill and I are going to head back, throughout the entire 50 years. We'll start back right in 1969 when he and Lowell George put the outfit together, and what it was like in those first few months of the band, what they wanted this to be, what they expected it to be. Little Feat is a band that's had so many different sounds throughout the years, and it's really fun talking about those, going from the boogie sound of those early records, and especially with singles like Dixie Chicken, to turning more towards jazz fusion, and really everything in between. We'll also talk about a few records specifically. 1979's Down on the Farm. It's not the best moment in their history, and Bill tells us about how his memory of that era actually paints how he hears those songs. It would be the last record of the band with Lowell George on it before he passed away and before the band were calling it a day themselves. Then we'll head to 1988 for the Let It Roll record, the reunion record. This is version 2.0, when things got back going and ended up being quite the success for the band. And we'll also hear about their most recent one, which came out in 2012, a record called Rooster Rag. We'll get into will there be another record, and if there needs to be. He'll also tell me about their famous song, Oh Atlanta, which has some strong connections to Kentucky. not just within the first lyric, and the other side of his life. Bill's been playing with the Doobie Brothers for quite a long time now. In fact, he'll tell us that they celebrate their 50th anniversary next year. He's a part of all of that as well, and there's some interesting news with new music from the Doobies as well. But for the most part, we'll be talking about his first main gig. It's Kyle Meredith with Bill Payne of Little Feat.
Hey, Kyle. How are you?
October 11th, you're going to be here in Louisville playing at the Louisville Palace right next door to us here at WFPK for the 50th anniversary of Little Feat. The band got together in 1969. It's probably a dumb question, but does it feel like 50 years?
It feels like 100. You know what, Kyle? It does feel like 50, and the way I've been able to get my head around it is just to sort of view it in different sections. Right now, I'm on tour with the Doobie Brothers. I'm in Bakersfield, California, home of Buck Owens. Not his home, but this is where he resided. And, you know, so I've been on the road for a long, long time, and with various bands, but Little Feat always being at the center of my at least professional life. And it's hard to believe that. I mean, when Law and I in 69 thought, well, we probably won't be a household name, but we hope to be well known within the musical community. That has certainly happened. A lot of us have worked with various different people, and man, it's just it's wonderful to still be out here and feeling good, playing great music, and what else is there?
You said you see it in segments and everything, and I'd like to go through a few of those in that way, segments, because Little Feat, there was not one sound. You were a band that was sort of a different band, even with the same members. You were sort of a different band at various stages of your career. But in those first few months, of 1969, I know the actual debut album wouldn't come out for a couple of years after that. But what were those first few months like? Did you know what you wanted this band to be, what you wanted it to sound like?
First of all, I wanted to be in a band, period. I'd been in groups since I was 15. Since 69, I was 20 years of age. And met Lowell, who had been playing with the Mothers of Invention with Frank Zappa. Our idea of a band back then was musically keep it open, keep it eclectic. In other words, draw from various sources that we enjoyed, which we did, which included jazz and country, rock and roll, R&B, et cetera, which gave us the voice that we had as a band would be, say, if we played Happy Birthday, we would still sound like Little Feat, which I think was pretty darn cool. The expansion of the band, if we wanted horns, if we wanted another guitar player, if we wanted to try this and that, that was also inclusive, and part of our thinking was we'd have a core group, and then whatever we wanted to do to try things, explore. That was really what the band was about. It was an exploration of music and genres and whatnot. So I've also said many times over the last 50 years that you'd have to be in 10 different bands to play the type of music that Little Feat was allowed to play. It was an experiment in terror, let's just put it that way.
A lot's been written about how rock unfolded, but even for all that you all were doing, it's amazing to me that it's not like you had the deepest well of influences to maybe build on. I mean, rock as we know it, minus maybe what happened in the 50s, starts in earnest, let's say, 63, right? I mean, I think a lot of people could put that as the new ground zero and everything. So to have all that you all were doing, but, you know, for what changed in those 7 years, it's amazing.
Well, it was a golden age that we were a part of. And, I still look at artists like the Byrds and the Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan. You know, I look up to those people. I mean, when I go in to do sessions, Kyle, I go in at eye level with people. But in my heart, the people that came before Little Feat, I'm looking up, not down. It's there's a deep respect for the music I was listening to, the artists that I was influenced by. I had a chance when Little Feat played in Melbourne, Australia. We were leaving from Melbourne. We'd been at the a festival up in Byron Bay, and we had toured with Leon Russell, and he was waiting in a van getting ready to go out to the airport. We were assembling to do the same thing. And I just walked over to the van. I introduced myself. I said, look, I don't want to bother you, but I want to thank you for being influential to me as a young guy in 1969, 70, when Little Feat was just getting together. And he was very gracious about it. We shook hands, and but it was nice to be able to say something to a person that I really admired and was quite influential in my early going.
And then, you know, just a few years after that, you guys, well, as you mentioned, I mean, you were messing with it from the beginning, but kind of bringing in jazz, it almost seems like what you did there with jazz and jazz fusion ended up being a prophecy of what would happen, you know, more towards as the 70s went on and especially into the 80s. I mean, even Miles ends up coming around, you know, at some point to doing it himself. Where did that part come from for you? How did you end up there?
Well, you know, you mentioned Miles Davis, and Miles had Bitches Brew, which was a groundbreaking album, and it had Joe Zawinul on it. Joe Zawinul, for people listening, played with Weather Report, and they had that, I don't know if it was Teen Town, or there was one of the songs that, boom, 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 boom. They had a huge hit with that as an instrumental. If folks go back into the archives it was a TV show called The Midnight Special. They'll see Little Feet. Bonnie, I think, was on it. Emmylou Harris. I don't know if Ronstadt or I think it was Nicolette Larson. But I was asked to put some bands together, which I did, and I brought the ladies in, and I also brought in Weather Report, and they had Jaco Pastorius playing bass, and so those influences were there, and Miles was there right in the beginning. I think when I visited Lowell's house in summer of 69, part of his record collection included Ohm by John Coltrane, for example. So those antecedents to us playing jazz were there. It would just be a matter of when we would feel comfortable enough to lean into it and make it a part of our vocabulary.
I also want to hit on you know, a couple of the records that just happened to be in their anniversary, their big round number anniversary year themselves. Down on the Farm was it's sort of storied as the final one before things took off again 10 years later. But did it feel, you know, we were talking about it, you know, Little Feet maybe always being a different band or whatever. Did it feel mm-hmm. like a different thing by that point? Did you know that the wheels had come off even going into that?
Oh, yeah. No, it was it was a mess for a while. And Lowell was unpredictable. Let's just put it that way. And he would disappear for, weeks at a time. And I read later about Jerry Garcia that he was doing the same thing. Their band, the Grateful Dead, going, "Where's Jerry?" And then they're all jumping up and down, happy when he go come back. Same with Little Feet. But yeah, it was a rough period. I actually quit the band before that record. I thought I'd make one more record with everybody, but I just had it. And Lowell went on his tour, his solo tour, and he passed away. And later, I worked with John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd. I'd been asked to be on the Blues Brothers movie. I couldn't do it. I was working with James Taylor. But I played on their second album for the Blues Brothers, and I was asked to play at the rap party at Universal in Los Angeles, which I did. And John Belushi, after the gig, came up to me and says, "You know, Bill, I'd love to do the Lowell George story someday." And I said, "Man, you would be perfect for that." And he was a little too perfect. He pretty well went out the same way Lowell did. And yeah, these are just extraordinary. I'm sort of like this fly on the wall. In terms of a career with people. And that night at Universal included Duck Dunn and Steve Cropper, who were also in that band. So I've had a ringside seat to not just Little Feet, but 6 years with James Taylor, working with Bob Seger, Bonnie Raitt, and Lou Harris. It gets to the point where I go, you know what, I can't hold a job, I guess.
But it is amazing, and it feels like, you know, even I don't know, I'll stick with that one for one more with Down on the Farm. To have an experience like that, does it paint how you hear that record? I'm obviously remembering it, you know, kind of goes there, and I don't know if you ever even go back to listen to the albums or anything, but does having that kind of experience how you feel about the songs on the record?
Well, you mentioned that 10-year hiatus we had after that, and to answer your question, yes, it definitely paints how you hear it, at least initially. Later, you get enough distance to hear beyond the experience of recording it, which could be pleasant, as was the case of making, let's say, Feet Don't Fail Me Now. Not so pleasant with the last record album, and because of Lowell's death, not a great experience with Down on the Farm. But when I'm up on stage playing those songs, I don't compartmentalize that end of it. But the records, yeah. In fact, I got away from Little Feet in my head and just otherwise during that 10-year hiatus. Not for the entire 10 years, by the way. But I was surprised, and I don't know why, that people were just loved the band. And, you know, the musicians I was playing with, Lee Sklar, Dan Dugmore, Cooch, Waddy Wattel, and then the artists I was working with, James Taylor and Seeger. I mean, all these guys, they loved Little Feet. And I was like, wow, we had that kind of impact. Okay. It was an eye opener, and it was, I'm a little slow sometimes, so I'll just put it that way.
Well, it does roll back around. So, you know, just nearly 10 years later, 1988, Let It Roll comes out, and this seems like the triumphant return. I mean, it's on paper, at least in history, however you want to look at that, it seems mm-hmm. like this was the validation that you're talking about. Like, yes, this was real. People do love us.
It also speaks to another thing too, Kyle, which is that Little Feet is bigger than any one component. Blow was a huge component of Little Feet. We were questioned by many as to how can you do it without Lowell. And my thinking was not unlike when I heard the Yardbirds in the late 60s and Jeff Beck wasn't there. And I went, well, gee, where's Jeff Beck? Me and our friends that went to Pismo Beach to hear them. And this other guy starts playing as Jimmy Page. Well, Jimmy Page was incredible. Craig Fuller is an amazing singer. I think he fitted in quite aptly, but nobody is Lowell George. You know, Jimmy Beck, okay, fine. We still weren't there yet, but I knew that if you had the material and what we talked about very early in the interview, which is if it sounded like Little Feet, then we had a good chance I wanted to get it past my own purview first. Was I getting off on the music? And if I was, then I figured a lot of other people would. And that was the bar I set. Because by that time, I'd been working with quite a few people. Stevie Nicks was another artist I had the honor of working with. And Jackson Browne. I turned down the Rolling Stones to tour with them because I just was in a bit of a free-for-all and free-fall in a personal level with marriage and whatnot. And I was also working with three or four different bands. And it was just an overload, so I turned them down. And it's one of the few things I regret, even if mildly, but I also keep in perspective that I was able to put Little Feet back together because I wasn't working with the Rolling Stones. So it's been like a Dickinson tale, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, you all have now had as many records post-Lowell as there in that first run there, obviously with Rooster Rag being the most recent one in 2012. You know, and again, that's solid proof of everything you just said right there. Although, I should ask, it has been since 2012. Is there still that desire? Do you need to do more records? Is that in you?
Well, I'd love to. Personally, I don't know if we can. I'm not sure what we're going to do. I've written 20 songs, four of which were recorded on Rooster Rag with Robert Hunter. I've got another, so that leaves 16, and with my feeble math. But I've written a lot of other songs with Paul Muldoon, who's a Pulitzer Prize winning poet, teaches at Princeton, used to hold the top chair at Cambridge. He's a wonderful writer. Joe Henry and I have written a song. I've written a bunch with my son. I've got a lot of other tunes that I've written on top of that. So one way or another, I'd like to get those recorded. And if I could do some with Little Feet, Tom Garnsey's another friend of mine from Montana, where I live. We've written a lot of cool tunes. So, yeah, I mean, my energy's there. I'm just not sure, other than doing the 50-year tour with Little Feet, where we are right now. So 2020 will reveal quite a lot, I'm sure.
Now, do you ever consider introducing those through the Doobies to see if they want the songs?
I sure have. And they've got there's a 4 or 5 tunes EP they're putting out pretty soon, I think. And which includes the songs that they wrote with their producer. He's a wonderful writer, and Tommy and Pat Simmons went in. Tom Johnston and Pat Simmons went in and wrote some songs with him. And they sound really good. I played on them, and which I was happy to do. I played on most of the Doobie Brothers records. It is their 50th anniversary next year, 2020.
Right.
So it's going to be a big year for 2 years in a row for me.
50 years
involved
twice.
In all this. I know. I mean, I go right from this tour. We wind up October 6th. On the 7th, I get up early, not too early, but jump a plane up to Minneapolis and start with Little Feet that evening till the end of the run. And we'll certainly be looking for the Derby Pie when we're in your neck of the woods.
You know, you've got the song "Oh Atlanta," which isn't about Kentucky, but it starts with that name. Is that a street?
The name, it's actually your state because the airport.
Is a state.
Yeah, it's Kentucky, and it's the airport. I believe is either in Kentucky or in Ohio, but Kentucky is on the other side of the river, let's say, or we're on the other side of the line. And I was amazed at people watching planes take off. This is on our first tour. It was technically in 1970. We played the Reflections Club in Cincinnati and held about 1,000 people. And people were, we did two nights. It was on Christmas Day and I think the 26th, or maybe even Christmas Eve and the 25th. But they were all going crazy down there singing football songs. Their team with Woody Hayes, the Buckeyes, were going out to the Rose Bowl to play Stanford, and they lost. Which, we weren't exactly reveling in that, but they weren't paying any attention to us either. So it was a little bit of a pronouncement there. But yeah, Kentucky is exactly what I was writing about. And there's a friend of mine, the cat lives in Kentucky. He's got a place in Nashville and Kentucky, and I spent a little time in Kentucky on his farm, I guess, which is cool. So it's a good place. Yeah, our road manager with the Doobie Brothers is from Kentucky as well.
Oh, cool. So
yeah, it's a good connection with you guys.
Yeah, well, it'll be, you know, of course, it'd be a little exciting to hear that that track right there. And again, when you all bring it here, do you still find that there is new places to take, you know, these songs live?
Yeah, in fact, when I was doing some solo work a few years ago, I was doing Oh Atlanta, and I threw it into more of a New Orleans slant, it wasn't the beat so much, but it's the way I played it. I slowed it down quite a bit. Gotta play down Kentucky, right down near Ohio, that kind of thing with the rolling piano beneath it. It was fun to play. It was nice to listen to. And then when I wanted to do the breakdown with the chorus, let everybody sing it with me, and then boom, I'd go into the original beat on it. It was kind of fun. So, I view the music for what it is, which is a language. And whenever I can converse with people musically, I like to do so. If I was sitting in front of a piano, I would have played it for you just now. But I'm in a hotel room in Bakersfield, California. So
appreciate the sentiment just the same. Bill, it is certainly a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking the time. October 11th, we've got Little Feet here in town at the Louisville Palace for the 50th anniversary. I am so looking forward to that. It's been a pleasure.
It truly has. Thanks for the conversation, Kyle. And if you get a chance, please stop by and backstage and say hey.
Absolutely. Will do.
All right, man. Take care.
All right. You too. See you later.
Bye-bye.
And my thanks to Bill Payne. Little Feet, they're on their 50th anniversary tour throughout the rest of this year. And that does it for this one. Before you get out of here, if you're not a subscriber, I do hope you hit that subscribe button right now. So we put out interviews with all your favorite stars Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And if you are a subscriber, please do give the series a rating and leave a review as well. That's always so helpful in this podcasty world. After that, you can head to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. There's new song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, and of course more interviews, bonus interviews even, at WFPK.org. ConsequenceOfSound.net has your music and film news. You can also find me at Twitter at Kyle Meredith and Facebook / Kyle Meredith. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.